From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The UN Security Council Thursday unanimously adopted a resolution aimed at starving the so-called Islamic State of its funding. The 28-page resolution was jointly sponsored by the U.S. and the Russian Federation and was co-sponsored by a broad group of nations. It enables asset freezes, travel bans, arms embargoes, and listing criteria for ISIL, Al-Qaeda, and associated groups. We'll have more on that, including a statement from Syria's UN Ambassador Bashar Ja'afari, later in this newscast. Cuba and the U.S. have announced an agreement to restore commercial airline flights. The news comes 1 year to the day after U.S. President Barack Obama and Cuba's President Raul Castro agreed to put aside Cold War differences and restore diplomatic relations. CCTV's Michael Voss has more.
Today, the United States of America is changing its relationship with the people of Cuba.
It was a historic joint announcement which took the world by surprise. 12 months on, and Cuba and the United States have reopened their embassies. They've reached deals on scheduled flights and direct mail services. They've also begun negotiations about compensation for U.S. properties which were seized after the revolution.
I think that the most important achievements have been about engaging in a very intense conversation process. Normalization implies dialogue, implies negotiation.
On December the 17th, 2014, Cubans took to the streets to celebrate the news. But for those cheering then, how does it feel now? This week, I went to visit this couple to find out whether their lives have changed at all since then.
It's little by little. There is nothing dynamic. We do not see any fast change, but we are happy with what Obama did.
Has your life improved at all in the last year?
A little, because actually the U.S. trade embargo, the blockade is still in place and it affects ordinary people.
Cuba continues to insist that the U.S. must end the trade embargo before they can have normal relations. But the authorities here also appear reluctant to approve those deals that are on offer, from ferry services to help with expanding the internet. It's Cuba's private sector which so far is benefiting the most. There's been a constant stream of Americans visiting Cuba now that Washington has eased travel restrictions. From politicians and businessmen to the just plain curious. They can book private lodgings through Airbnb, and private restaurants are doing a roaring trade. 12 months on, Cuba remains a country in transition, but just where it's heading is far from clear. Michael Voss, CCTV, Havana.
Polls in the lead-up to Spain's 2015 general election on Sunday show that Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy's People's Party is receiving most votes, but falling well short of a majority in Parliament. The People's Party has promised to cut income tax and create 2 million jobs over the next 4 years if they retain their hold on power. CCTV's Clint DeLoach has more.
The latest poll on December the 3rd by the Sociological Research Center put the party on course to win with 28.6% of the vote. The Socialists came in second with 20.8% of the vote. The Ciudadanos and Podemos third and fourth with 19 and 15.7% respectively. With the Spanish economy returning to growth in 2013, the People's Party has promised to cut income taxes and create 2 million jobs over the next 4 years if they stay in power.
The next government will also have to deal with a growing independence movement in the northeastern region of Catalonia. A pushback against the newly elected right-wing president of Argentina, a massive protest in the capital, Buenos Aires. Press TV's Kanish Fatima has more.
People in Argentina have taken to the streets to protest a government plan aimed at changing media ownership law.
We feel that we have to defend some major achievements that have been accomplished over the years, like those that are related to liberty, democracy, and pluralism. We feel this is all being threatened. A clear example of this is media law.
Chanting anti-government slogans, the protesters, including supporters of former President Cristina Fernandez, gathered outside Argentina's Congress. The communications law limits the number of TV and radio licenses that can be obtained by one company. But President Mauricio Macri plans to scrap the anti-monopoly law. The protest comes just 1 week after Argentinian president took power. The new conservative government has also pushed for changes to currency exchange and export laws. Following those changes, Argentina's peso has plunged around 30%.
Isaac Bijou is a commentator on Latin American affairs. He discussed the new media privatization and deregulation law and other changes proposed by President Macri.
Well, basically, the current law forbids private companies to have a strong presence on the media. For example, only one-third of the TV and radio should be for private companies. So with the new changes made by Macri, it will mean that the whole privatization of the radio and the TV. And as we can see in countries like Peru, for example, when the TV is completely privatized, the TV is neoliberal and is full of rubbish programs, you know, no educative programs. So the new law is also linked with an economic shock. The devaluation of the peso, 40-50%, they are going to cut subsidies for electricity. And basically, Argentina will become now a liberal country where everybody can import or export. Subsidies are going to start to be cut. So Argentina is going to cease to be a country with a protectionist policies. And so it's going to be a freehold for private companies. We have the same program with Menem in the 90s and with the complete liberalization of Argentina. Argentina has a very, very strong crisis, and that led to protest, to and the downfall of several governments. So I think that Macri is entering very soon in the path of Menem. No?
Telesur's Laureano Ponce reports from Buenos Aires with more.
Many say that the aggressive shock of measures in Macri's first week are being executed at such a fast pace to take advantage of a few situational coincidences. For example, number one, the monopolised mass media and pro-government sectors, which are constantly saying that Macri must be given a fair go in his first 100 days as president. Two, these same sectors are saying that the regressive reforms that the government are executing so quickly are necessary due to the supposed mess that the Front for Victory government has left behind. And three, the fact that Congress is in summer recess and reopens in March. Macri can summon extraordinary sessions of Congress, but no one really expects him to do it. These are three coincidences which are giving the government oxygen and valuable time to proceed with their aggressive neoliberal agenda. And it must be said, with a massive helping hand from the mainstream media. The protests have certainly been massive, even overtaking the expectations of many of the Argentines here who are active in social movements. And they have been absolutely huge during the past week. The problem is that none of the dominant media outlets here in Argentina or any of the international ones have covered any of these massive protests. And what we have seen is a massive media shutdown from the voice of the people.
The UN Security Council Thursday unanimously adopted a 28-page resolution aimed at starving the so-called Islamic State of its funding. Jointly sponsored by the U.S. and the Russian Federation, and boasting a long list of co-sponsors, The resolution enables asset freezes, travel bans, arms embargoes, and listing criteria for ISIL, Al-Qaeda, and, quote, associated individuals, groups, undertakings, and entities, closed quote, with a periodic review for possible additional provisions. ISIL is believed to be receiving most of its funding from Western and regional countries such as Saudi Arabia. In addition, Turkey stands accused of doing large-scale oil trading with the terrorist group in both Syria and Iraq. A recent study suggested that ISIL's monthly revenue is about $80 million. Throughout the text of the resolution, the Council reaffirmed that those responsible for committing, organizing, or supporting terrorist acts must be held accountable and urged states to fully coordinate any investigations or proceedings involving ISIL, Al-Qaeda, and the other groups. Ambassador Bashar Ja'afari is the permanent representative of the Syrian Arab Republic to the United Nations. He spoke with journalists at a UN press stakeout following Thursday's adoption of that Security Council resolution.
The resolution meets many of the concerns repeatedly raised by the Syrian government, in particular, ensuring the full and effective implementation by the governments of all member states of the previous relevant resolutions of the Security Council, namely speaking 2170, 2178, and 2199. All the above mentioned resolutions emphasize the prevention of supporting and financing the terrorism of ISIL and Al-Nusra Front, as well as other terrorist entities and individuals affiliated with Al-Qaeda. The above-mentioned resolutions also call for combating foreign terrorist fighters and preventing the trafficking of oil and looted antiquities by ISIL and other terrorist entities affiliated with Al-Qaeda. The new resolution is an important addition to Security Council resolutions related to combating terrorism, since this new resolution sends a strong message about the intention of the Council to ensure the compliance by all member states to the provisions of this new resolution, while emphasizing the accountability of those who violate it and exposing them through authorizing the monitoring team and ISIL Al-Qaeda committee to gather information and report to the Council about cases of non-compliance. The resolution emphasizes the gravity of the threat posed by ISIL and its growing threat that equals and perhaps exceeds the threat posed by Al-Qaeda. The resolution also includes an endorsement of the Council of the fact that ISIL is not a dependent entity of Al-Qaeda. This is for the first time being acknowledged fully by the member states, something we called for during the last 4 years, 3 years. The Syrian government has repeatedly called on the Committee of Resolution 1267 and 1989 to include ISIL as an independent terrorist entity and not as a branch for Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And the delegations of Western permanent members in the Council have prevented the fulfillment of our request. We hope that the adoption of this resolution will constitute a turning point and contribute to achieving effective and rapid results in combating terrorism, which represents a threat to international peace and security, and to the member states, particularly my country, Syria. We expect, after the adoption of this resolution, the Security Council to carry out its responsibilities as required and to tolerate no more the fact that some well-known governments support and finance terrorism that targets the Syrian state and the Syrian people. Those well-known governments also bring and facilitate the passage of foreign terrorist fighters into Syria and train and arm them, as well as their involvement in direct and indirect trafficking of oil and looted Syrian cultural property with terrorists. I have just read out for your concern a statement on behalf of my government in light of the adoption a few minutes ago by the Security Council of its resolution 2253.
Sure. Can I ask you a question?
Please.
Thanks a lot. How do you think this resolution applies to the sale of oil by Daesh or ISIL? Which some people have said it goes through Turkey, maybe elsewhere. Some people have said it's bought by the government. How do you, and also, what's your comment on the New York Palace Hotel meetings tomorrow? What do you think will come out of it? Will you be participating in any capacity? And what do you think of the Riyadh meeting and the opposition coalition that came out of it?
Let me start where you have just finished. We will participate at tomorrow's meeting, and I will make a statement on behalf of my government. Now, with regard to the first part of your question, this resolution, the way is described, the way it was explained inside the Security Council itself a few minutes ago, is what we call a global framework to combat terrorism, meaning that this resolution constitutes a compilation of all previous resolutions on combating terrorism adopted by the Security Council. All, I mean. The other 12 resolutions on combating terrorism adopted by the Security Council, starting with 1267 and ending up with 2199, all of them are being included for the first time in a comprehensive draft resolution on combating terrorism. What does that mean? That means a lot. For the first time, the 15 member states are engaged, seriously speaking, not only politically, but also technically speaking. You call it financially, it's technical. But which means we are not only engaged at the level of the diplomats and foreign affairs, foreign ministers, but also at the level of finances, ministers of finances, and the technical experts on combating terrorism. Now, nobody could elude or manipulate the issue of combating terrorism under any pretext or under any argument. The Syrian government kept asking for 3 years to deal with Daesh and Al-Qaeda and all other terrorist organizations as entities, terrorist entities, by the Security Council. To be honest with you, many times, our call to deal with Daesh, seriously speaking, were blocked by some Western members in the Security Council. 10 times, presidential statements were blocked by some Western countries, and these statements were not adopted consequently by the Security Council, although they were drafted to condemn terrorist acts perpetrated on the soil of my country, Syria. Some of them were suicidal bombers, some of them were booby cars, bombings that killed scores of civilians. So now this new resolution will not give authorization to anybody to evade or misinterpret the Security Council iron will to combat terrorism. Here I'm, of course, including the issue of oil trade, artifacts trade, all of them illegal, definitely, which are fulfilled by the terrorist groups through Turkish mediators and through the Turkish soil.
Ambassador, are you prepared to participate in peace talks with the opposition groups that met in Riyadh? And have you heard any dates from the UN about when those talks will?
I will comment on these kind of questions tomorrow in the meeting which will be allocated to this issue.
One further question, though, on tomorrow. The timeline of the Vienna
process has been announced for some time. Peace talks and a ceasefire in January, just weeks away. Is that realistic?
I will address this issue tomorrow in a special press conference.
Here?
Yes.
Ambassador, just explain to us how you'll participate tomorrow and how, you know, what your hopes are.
We will participate as usual. I will make a statement on behalf of my government, as usual. I mean, business as usual.
Russia has, Ambassador, Russia has...
In the morning.
Excuse me. Ambassador, Russia has accused Turkey of buying oil from ISIS. Do you have any information on that?
We did accuse the Turkish government of dealing with ISIS in this illegal oil trade and artifacts trade long time ago. If you may remember, we raised this concern 2 years ago. And at many times, at many occasions, our requests to deal with this issue seriously were somehow avoided by some influential members in the Security Council. Nowadays, we have just co-sponsored this resolution, and this is for the first time the Syrian government co-sponsors a draft resolution on combating terrorism. We did that because we believe that this resolution, if implemented, would prevent once for all the Turkish government from playing these double cards with everybody or misleading the so-called international community. It's no secret anymore that the Turkish government is deeply involved in this, in the financing of the Daesh networks, as well as other terrorist entities such as Ahrar al-Sham and other armed groups operating inside Syria. I would like to refer you to a very important article published this week by the Der Spiegel, which discloses for the first time again that European companies of telecommunications are providing ISIL with technological services to avoid the control of the special police in Europe as well as in the world. So some European companies are also involved in this illegal trade of oil and artifacts, and they are helping the terrorists of Daesh and Jabhat al-Nusra in the field of telecommunications.
Do you think the current resolution or any of the previous ones you mentioned will be addressing what are described as the root causes of terrorism, or will this just be the superstructure without dealing with the rampant inequality and the destitute?
Thank you for this question. It's very important. You are absolutely right. This is why we have always said that we don't need the new resolutions. We need to implement the current resolutions. We need to see real commitment by the governments, all the governments, to the existing resolutions, Security Council resolutions on combating terrorism. This one is a little bit different because it is a compilation of all the resolutions. It is the final standpoint by the Security Council on the issue of combating terrorism. For the first time, we are not addressing only and exclusively the financial issue aspect of terrorism. We are addressing all the aspects, not only the financial. This resolution does not address only the financial aspect. It addresses all the aspects related to terrorism. So all what we need is to see the member states' governments implementing this resolution and the previous resolutions also. Some of the members in the Security Council are an integral part of the crisis which exists right now in Syria and Iraq by helping Daesh, ISIL, and others. And here, of course, I'm referring, as I said, to the Turkish government, for instance. It's not a secret anymore. Even the Americans are criticizing the Turkish government for not controlling and monitoring the borders with Syria. So, I mean, this big issue is now well known to everybody. The Turkish government is involved. The Saudi government is involved. The Qatari government is involved. The Jordanian government is involved. Enough is enough. The Syrian bloodshed is not cheap. The Iraqi blood is not cheap. The Syrian blood is not cheap. We have to put an end to this hypocrisy inside the Security Council itself by some members.
Ambassador, could you speak to tomorrow's meeting, your hopes, and maybe speak to issues of who you perceive as spoilers in the peace process?
I will address this issue widely tomorrow.
We need a soundbite to work with early in
tomorrow,
the morning.
Tomorrow, I promise.
You can't give it to us now?
You will see me tomorrow.
Mr. Ambassador, the U.S. recently levied sanctions on an individual that it said was facilitating the oil trade between effectively your government and ISIS. Is the government buying oil in any way from ISIS or middlemen that may be involved with ISIS?
This is a very naive question because we have co-sponsored the draft resolution which was adopted a few minutes ago. We have co-sponsored the main global comprehensive resolution ever adopted by the Security Council on combating illegal oil and artifacts trade with the terrorists, including ISIL. What you have alluded to is absolutely incorrect.
Ambassador, can you at least give us a comment as to whether you welcome the peace talks tomorrow? Is this something you support? What's your position?
Tomorrow there will be peace talks? Who told you that? Who told you there will be peace talks?
You
are insisting on getting something, but I will not give you anything because we are waiting till tomorrow. And tomorrow meeting is not about peace talks.
So
the peace talks are only among the Syrians themselves without any foreign interference. Without any foreign interference. Underline it. And we will address it tomorrow. Yes, the meeting is about it, but it's not peace talks.
So how would you characterize them then?
Tomorrow I will characterize it.
What about this
Thank you.
Saudi-led coalition? Do you have any kind of, what do you think of this 34-country coalition announced by Saudi Arabia to fight terrorism, based in Riyadh, with involving Benin and a number of other African countries as well as Gulf countries? What do you think of it?
It's unfortunately another misstep, misdeeds by the Saudis with regard deviating and shifting the attention from the main front, which is combating terrorism, globally speaking, and within a united and unified front. We don't need to combat ISIL through an Islamic Sunni coalition, then an Islamic Shi'i coalition, and then a Christian coalition, and then an American coalition, and then a Russian coalition, and then quadripartite coalition. You don't combat terrorism this way. You combat terrorism genuinely when you build up one coalition encompassing all these people and all these states. The Saudis' move is aimed at emptying the idea of combating terrorism, globally speaking, from its main meaning. Let me explain to you why. Theoretically speaking, these 33 or 34 countries you have mentioned, which are part of the new Saudi coalition, are themselves already part of the American coalition. Just to give you an idea about how superficial and how unprofessional the constitution of this so-called coalition is. You are taking 33 countries out of this American coalition members and you are calling them Islamic Sunni coalition. It's appalling, it's nonsense, it's shameful to divide the Muslims into Sunni and Shia because after all, we believe firmly that the establishment of such a Saudi coalition without having all the Muslims, all the Islamic countries on board is a good recipe for divisions among the Islamic world as well as a good justification for the terrorists to play this division of labor between who is Muslim and who is not Muslim. So they are playing the cards of ISIL, actually. They are fulfilling the objective of ISIL by ignoring to have everybody on board. How could the Saudis combat ISIL in Syria and Iraq while they are failing in Yemen and destroying Yemen? What is this double language? And who would believe the Saudis anymore when they talk about combating terrorism? They are the main reason of spreading and disseminating the Takfiri and Wahhabi thoughts all over the Islamic world. they are behind these ramifications of terrorist entities all over the world. They are the ones who are financing this terrorism all over the world. The root causes of the terrorism in the world is in Saudi Arabia itself.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.